Thanks for joining us on Battle Walks as we walk across the great battlefields of Europe. If you're enjoying the show, why not become a member? Every week, you'll receive exclusive bonus episodes available only to subscribers, and you can listen to all our episodes completely ad-free. Click on the link in the show notes to join us via Acast Plus.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the podcast. Amazing. We are on the battlefields, Pete. We are here. We're in Belgium. We're sitting in the wonderful town of Ypres, which we love. We have a beer in hand. Let's do a cheers so people know that we're actually here.
That was cheers.
Didn't sound great, but trust me, you get the idea.
Wipers Times.
Wipers Times beer in our hands. We've had an amazing day in the battlefields. We are on the signature tour, the Matt and Pete signature tour, and we just wanted to do, like we did last year, a breakdown of our great day. Pete, brilliant first day, I think.
It was good. The coach turned up, always a good thing when the coach turns up. Nice drive out of Paris, onto the motorway, A1, heading north, and first stop, services on the... Well, no, it's important.
Cause it wouldn't be a podcast if Pete didn't talk about going to the toilet.
No, the services on the A1 at Aspilliers, very important because it's on the Australian battlefield. So we start even our stops on the motorway, Australian battlefield, straight off.
It's been a good day, and I should say right off the bat, we have a special guest joining us on the podcast. I'm going to move your beer out of the way so we can get a microphone there.
I'll hold it.
Probably our favourite passenger. No offence to our other passengers, but... It's our special guest is Andrew Bellamy, who has done more tours. I think he's our number one repeat guest.
Without a shadow of a doubt.
Andrew, say hello to all the listeners.
Good evening, listeners.
That's Andrew Bellamy. So we're going to be passing a microphone around here a little bit, but we needed Andrew to come in because one of the things we did today was quite exceptional and is Andrew's specialty. He knows more about this than I'd say anyone else, and we'll get to that in a minute. But, Pete, our day, we left the gloom of Paris. It was raining. It was a... not a good day. We headed out. You're right. We stopped at Ars Villas for to get supplies. And then I should say to people that the beautiful thing about the first day of the tour is the agenda is basically get from Paris to Ypres, which is a few hours up across the Belgian border. And so because it's our signature tour, because we want to make this different and interesting, we basically just do things that we want to do on the way up there. And today that started with going to some 1918 battlefields that don't often get visited.
It does indeed, but we had a worse for myself, something worse before that was the realisation in the rain that I'd left my waterproof jacket in the hold luggage in the coach and I didn't have access to it. But thankfully, the rain, by the time we got to our first port of call, the rain had stopped.
Almost as if we'd planned it.
It was. Yeah, it was.
And our first port of call was, okay, I'm going to mangle the pronunciation. Actually, Pete, I'd like you to pronounce it.
No, I can't. You
do listeners,
it.
Listeners well know.
You do it.
Okay, so it's, well, to the Aussies, it would have been Vix Berquin. And I think in French it's something like Va Berquin, something like that.
Sounds good. I'm going to go with that.
It's V-I-E-U-X hyphen B-E-R-Q-U-I-N. But the point is, ignoring the pronunciation and the mangling of the pronunciation, this is an overlooked part of the battlefields. And that term gets used too much, the forgotten battle.
Yeah.
But in 1918, when the Germans were charging through and threatening to break through the whole line, the Australians did some good work. Not on their own, but... in certain areas, they did good work holding up the Germans, most famously at Villers-Bretonneux, but also up in the north near Hasbrouck.
Yeah, and for me, it's fascinating because almost nobody goes there, and I mean nobody. Australian First Division fighting there, forgotten, completely forgotten. So to actually take a coachload of clients there and to have a quick exploration of that town that Matt just pronounced.
We'll call it Dixburgwin.
Yeah, that's one. Yeah, great. And there's a very memorable plaque in the middle of the town.
Well, that's the thing. The French people who get a bad rap for often not remembering actions in their areas,
yeah,
do remember. There's a plaque on the wall of the town hall recording "They shall not pass," the Australians at Vicksburgwin.
Yeah, and particularly 7th and 8th Battalion.
Yes, that's correct.
So so literally linking in the town square. So
shout out to our Victorian listeners, Victorian battalions.
Yeah. So a really, really good stop, and one that's the first group of Australian clients I've ever taken there. So
it's only the second time I've ever been to this place. Yeah. I went once when I was writing my book Walking with the Anzacs, and that was in 2005. And now, you know, a solid 18 years later, I've gone back for the second time. And the oft-used statistic, but it's worth repeating, is that the two battalions, who were at about half strength, so say 1,000 men between the two battalions, held a 13-kilometre front against the Germans. And we were discussing this, Pete. If things were going well and you were setting up a defensive line, how many men would you normally have across 13 kilometres to try and hold it? And I think it'd be a couple of divisions. I think you're talking 20,000 men you would have.
You can imagine the guys here that are spread across this area having to shout to each other to cover the area that they're defending. So extraordinarily thin on the ground.
But they did it. They held off the Germans for 24 hours, which bought enough time for reinforcements to come up, and it was a great victory.
Yeah.
And it's recorded, you know, fairly modestly with that plaque in the town hall.
Yeah.
But it's a great place, and it's a very Australian area. The road between Vicksburgwin and La Motte-Arbois, the little village down the road, is the road is called the Rue de Bois, and that is basically an Australian, the Australians were up and down that road throughout that early part of 1918. This is an Australian sector where the Australians defended, the Australians made their own. So it was a great place to go with the tour group.
It was a great place to go, and there were some other extraordinary things that we did there, and one of them involves a pissoir. If nobody knows what a pissoir is, it's kind of like an outside toilet, and some of the chaps on the tour took advantage of using it.
I did just because I had to, because it's so open to the elements. You're basically standing there waving to the local residents while you do your business. I had to give it a go. It's so French.
The other thing I should say about the town, Andrew Bellamy, we'd actually been here before several times, and it is possibly the worst coffee we've ever drunk in the world in that square as well. It's a little bar. So anybody that goes there, then please call into the bar. But give them some of your money.
It is called an estaminet.
Estaminet, indeed. The old word, almost dying out in this area. One that's used, you know, the troops here in 1418. Estaminet is where they went for their egg and chips and their beer or vin blanc, plonk, that they will also have. But Andrew and I went in for a coffee. Yep, cheapest coffee we've ever had in France, but also the worst.
There's a reason for that.
Yeah.
And then we went down the road. We left Vicksburgwin, as we mangle the name, and we headed down the road towards La Motte-Arbois, and we stopped at, it is a lovely little cemetery, Niepbois, Rue de Bois. It's got a number of different names, but it's a World War One cemetery. It's a battlefield cemetery that obviously they put in there and there's 15 or 20 Aussies who were killed in this fighting we've just described during the German Spring Offensive are buried there. A number of Brits are buried there throughout later fighting as well. But then, of course, what's the other special aspect of this cemetery?
Yep, some of the casualties from 1940 are also buried in the cemetery.
So retreat to Dunkirk.
Yeah, retreat to Dunkirk. So you've got a gambit of things you can talk about, and I took the opportunity to do my famous cemetery talk.
Infamous,
that's the word. Infamous cemetery talk. So we had a general chat about cemeteries, the creation of cemeteries, and the reason why they're there. So, yeah, great location. And only slight problem was trying to park the coach. The Commonwealth Gardeners were working there, which was interesting because if you haven't seen them in operation, nice to see the Commonwealth War Graves Gardeners working, but they've taken up the whole parking space, so slight problem in getting us on and off the coach, but worthwhile.
I find this area quite sad, Pete, because of the 1940 connection. I just feel for those blokes. We talk about Dunkirk and the great achievement that it was getting 300,000 blokes off that beach and back to England and, you know, saving the British Army to fight another day, and I do absolutely relate to that. But, Andrew's just made a good point, which we'll get to in a second. But the poor blokes who were selected to be in the sort of the rear echelon, the fighting retreat, trying to hold back the entire Wehrmacht, while the Dunkirk operation was underway, and they came right through this area. So when you see those young blokes in that cemetery, it was a savage and a scary and a very lonely war for those men in 1940. And I really feel for them when I come through this area.
Yeah, me too. One of my favourite spots to go commemorating that retreat to Dunkirk is Cassel. Looks like Castle. It's basically a hill in the area. I think we've done the podcast on it.
We did the previous podcast.
Yeah, in the past. But we could see that from where we were. So it's a very moving area and one that I like visiting. And sadly, we also passed one of the massacre sites where the British soldiers were executed by the Germans illegally, and so that's always very moving as well.
And after that, we went to a site which we just picked because we were in the area. We knew it was a special site, and we knew that Andrew Bellamy, who we're going to bring in now, was on the tour with us, and the absolute expert on these sites. It was a German V1 launch site from the Second World War. We're going to do a quick microphone juggle. I'm going to come around here.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness,
because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
We're going to bring Andrew in because this was... No, you stay there, Pete. You stay there. We're just juggling around in the bar in Ypres. But it was a fantastic site. So this was a site that the Germans used to launch their V1 flying bombs, the terror weapons that I think something like 50,000 people in the UK were killed by these weapons. It's just extraordinary. Some huge number anyway. But Andrew Bellamy, who's with us, has made this his topic of expertise, and he's very passionate about it. Andrew, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you for having me.
It was great to have you there to walk this site, and it was a very well-preserved site. What does it mean to you, Andrew, after you've done so much research, you've visited dozens of these sites? How many sites do you think you've visited?
200
of these launch sites, but it's just...
Ish.
It was fantastic to walk this ground with you. And how was it to show people in the group? We basically handed the mics over to Andrew and allowed him to tour the site and share his expertise. How was it to go there with the group?
It was very interesting. The first thing is you have to start back at the beginning and try and build up the information so it sticks. Right? The group was good. The site is very, very well preserved. It is called Bois de Huit Rees. The Wood of Eight Roads.
I'm glad you said that, Andrew. I couldn't say that.
It's between Hasbrook and Morbeck. just north of the Forest of Nieppe, where we did the cemetery visit. It was a German dispersed site that did not fire a weapon at London because it was knocked out by the Allies beforehand.
Well, that was one of the key things I noticed about it, Andrew, was bomb craters everywhere, and even that in its own right. If we, I mean, if I'm a war nerd, if I was going through a field and someone said, "Oh, that hole over there is a bomb crater from World War II," I'd be pretty excited to see it in this wood, you know, this area that had been a V1 launch site and bomb craters everywhere. It's an extraordinary place,
and they're everywhere, they're everywhere. If you get off the concrete paths there, you're up and down hill and dale. They're all over the place. It's really, really, it's one of the best preserved and presented sites if you wish to come and see this sort of thing. It is well worth the time to come and have a look.
Yeah, I liked it. There's Andrew had a question from one of the clients, as how many times was it attacked? And he could immediately, quickly look at his iPad and reel off the list of number of attacks by what aircraft and dates. So it's great when you can actually do that, and you can imagine these planes dropping the bombs on the sites. Then it helps with your imagination of what you're looking at. So yeah, it was great. It really kind of opened it up to everybody.
It was an amazing sight from the first moments we were there, because we walked in on a concrete path that you'd assume was just put in by the local authorities to enable tourists. But no, that was constructed by the Germans. And from then on, everything was thrusting you back into the Second World War, all these well-preserved buildings and the stories, and you brought the stories to life. Andrew, why did these sites, out of all the war sites you could visit in this area, why did these sites captivate you so much?
Good question, Matt. Thank you. I don't know. The area I've chosen to look at, I like the intrigue of what could have happened, what did happen, right, and why did it not happen. The way that the Germans constructed these sites initially was not immune to being detected. So these sites were detected, bombed and disabled. The sites that actually fired at London, right, were in many cases detected, but in some cases not detected, right? And they were a much more minimalistic expression of what was required. Here there are, well, the site we went to, there were 14, 15 structures, right? The sites that actually worked, there were 6 or 5 structures, sometimes only 3 structures.
Well, to me, it demonstrated German arrogance that they were going to, you know, dominate Europe and fire these things on London with impunity. And, you know, there seemed to be a lack of foresight that as soon as they started laying huge areas of concrete, the Allies would notice them and bomb them to oblivion. But I thought there was something really interesting, Andrew. You described it as a game of cat and mouse, that the Germans were trying to build these sites. And it took a long time, obviously, to build a site. Mm. They were trying to build them under the noses of the Allies without them detecting them, yep, so that they could fire on London. And at the same time, the Allies were desperate to spot these things from the air and bomb them off the face of the earth. So it was a game of cat and mouse where both sides were trying to get ahead of the other.
Yeah, correct. The site that we went to today, Bois de Hutt-Rouge, was acknowledged by the Allies as a weapons site in December 43. You had to have been started construction at least September 43, 3 months ahead of time. It was begun to be attacked from January and was attacked through till May 44 and knocked out at the end of April. So you have 19 raids there, which the second last one actually disabled the site. Again and again, aircrew were going back to attack these sites. No effect, send them more. No effect, send them more. And all of a sudden, yes, thank you, we've got it stopped. It doesn't tell the other side of this story is those aircrew were being lost at that time as well. Right. So each time someone went across to do an attack, there's the ability to lose your attackers, right? And that story all the way through is a progressive thing.
I think from my point of view, I've been with Andrew on many of the his expeditions to research and to go and look at V1 launch sites. And the bit that I like is I find interesting and sad in many ways is, yes, the story of the Germans building them. And, of course, some of those builders are, in fact, from some of the camps, some of the labor camps, the death camps, who were brought here to build them. So there's a story of them, of the people that are building these sites. And then there's the story of the civilians who sadly are lost in the bombing. So it's one of the things that we quite often forget. We look at the combatants and what's going on, but many civilians, also French civilians, killed when in the bombing raids. So I enjoy going with Andrew and actually trying to research those and bring those people back into the story. And then, as Andrew just said, of course, there's the aircrew that are lost, many of whom lie in the little villages around the sites as well. So part of what Andrew enjoys, and I certainly enjoy taking him around, is looking at these facets of the V1 launch sites, not just about the actual firing and the sites themselves, and of course the damage they will cause back in Britain, but the story of the building of them, of their destruction, and of the French people who had to suffer the bombing campaigns to try and destroy them.
I mean, Pete, you said the word story, and for me, having not visited this site before, this was my first time, it's such a rich story. We've got... I've lived in London. I've sought out sites where V1 rockets crashed down and, you know, destroyed buildings in London. There's so many layers to this story. The Germans... I don't want to use the word respect because we can't respect the Nazis, but the work that they did, you can appreciate the work that they did to produce these weapons in, was it an 18-month?
Yeah. Monumental.
Time span.
Monumental.
To build this infrastructure. It's a daring side of war, the idea that we built this new technology, these rockets that we can fire. And it's horrific, but it's a new technology. It's a sort of cutting-edge technology. The concept that you would build them and try and hide them in woods from the Allies... The Allied map readers poring over aerial photographs trying to work out what's going on. Andrew gave us some fantastic accounts of how the aerial photograph, analysts worked out where these sites were. And then, you know, are the Germans going to manage to fire these weapons and what are they going to do when they land? There's just so many elements of the story. As you say, the local people, the terrible aspects of the slave labor. It's an incredible story.
It is. And I just love it when you get oddities on the tour in the middle of all of this. And I don't think Andrew even knows this, but we have one of the chaps on the tour is a photographic analyst. That was his military job, was looking at photographs. And
Andrew's getting excited at the suggestion. Pete, I want to ask you, this was my first time to the site, but you visit battlefields every day of your life. This one is a different sort of story. How do you feel about going to sites like this, like V1 launch sites, and how does it compare to where we are now, for example, only minutes down the road from Passchendaele or heading to the Somme?
Well, I think it's all about human stories. It's about the people that were here and knowing those human stories. And that's the aspect of the battlefield. It doesn't matter where it is. It is the stories of the individuals that are there. And I'll just go off on a quick tangent.
Please do. Where's the bell? Ring the bell. Ding, ding, ding. Big tangent.
Andrew and I, on one of our expeditions to visit V1 sites, came across a memorial in the middle of a paddock, in the middle of a field, literally. And we went across to go and have a look at it. And it was to a young French woman who had been killed in a bombing raid at the time when they're trying to take out the V1 sites. And so we couldn't quite understand what was going on. Why was it in the middle of the field and not obviously being cared for? And when we did further research, we discovered that the memorial was actually built by the Germans at the time. And she had been regularly visiting. I presume that she had a boyfriend in the in close to one of the V1 launch sites. And when she was killed on her way going to or from visiting probably her German boyfriend, then the Germans had actually built a memorial to her. But, of course, that's not really the done thing at the time, so not looked after nowadays by the French. We found her on the local war memorial. She was on the war memorial as well, but that took some tracking down. And then to discover the story of how she'd been. And that's what I love. It's those stories, those little stories about the individuals and the people involved in warfare and terrible times. So that's what I enjoy. It doesn't really matter where I am. It's those stories that we hopefully as historians bring to life for our clients.
That's an extraordinary story. I didn't know that, and that's an absolutely amazing story. You hear me putting my beer down. That's a with that story. Andrew, have you enjoyed this first day of the tour? You've got another 9 days to go. Have you as a passenger on the tour? I mean, you were more than a passenger today. You were a key contributor, and you've done this tour before. How was this experience for you today?
Oh, as always, Matt, excellent. This is
we're not paying him to say this, by the way. It's a genuine question.
No, I'm paying to be here. That's fine. this is the tour to go on because the itinerary is great, but it's what you wedge in between that makes the difference. We follow the way the itinerary runs, and all of a sudden there's something else that pops up. It's great. It's unexpected. It's
would that be a tangent?
a tour tangent. We should ring the bell.
Oh dear, yes, it would probably be a tangent, right? But these ones are planned, and the way the signature tour runs is it's what they want, Matt and Pete want to see and want to show to others that many people won't get to have a look at, right? And it is well worthwhile doing. And I enjoyed last year, and I'm sure I'm going to enjoy this year.
That was quite a ringing endorsement. Thank you, Andrew. You can come on next year's signature tour if you want to. There are spaces left.
Yeah, and I'll pay you later, Andrew.
Ching. I mean, gentlemen, I have to say, what a great first day. I can't believe it's only the first day of 10 days of out exploring the battlefields. Tomorrow, it's almost as if we planned it, Pete. It's the 4th of October tomorrow, the anniversary of the Battle of Broodseed Ridge, in which Tynecott Cemetery, the most iconic site on the Western Front, that area was captured by the Australians. And we will be there tomorrow on the anniversary.
Yeah, exactly where the 40th Battalion was fighting. So we'll be talking about the 40th Battalion tomorrow.
It's going to be a great day. It's always a great day when you explore the salient. And it's going to be hard to top today, I've got to say. It was a great first day of the trip. All of our new friends on the tour really enjoyed it. And I think we're going to find it difficult to top it, but we'll do our best. But Pete, Andrew, thank you for joining me. I'm excited about what we will do tomorrow and the future days. Pete, this is our pledge to the listeners that we will do more podcasts. We fell by the wayside last year, but this time we will do more podcasts. I'm going to drag him down and make sure we do. But just a great first day. I'm looking forward to the rest.
Certainly. Moi aussi.
Oh, French.
Yeah, it was French.
Andrew, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Pete.
Thank you, listeners. We'll talk to you in the next couple of days with more reports about our exciting time on the battlefields. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you would like to support the show, there's a couple of ways you can do it. Firstly, you can become a member. For a small monthly fee, you can subscribe to the show and listen to every episode ad-free and also receive exclusive episodes directly from Pete and I. So see the link in the show notes to sign up at Acast Plus and become a member of the show. Also, if you want to make a one-off contribution, you can now buy us a coffee. Visit buymeacoffee.com/battlewalks and you can make a small contribution there. See you next week.